Hey, listeners, are you getting inspired to dive deeper into your learning of EFFT? If so, head on over to Catherine's website to check out her list of upcoming trainings. Some trainings are focused on combining EFFT with young kids and EFFT play therapy. So head on over to her website and we hope to see you in the future. Check it out at katherinedebruin.com, katherinedebruin.com, and we hope to see you in the future.
Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back to the next episode of the Family Express podcast with Katherine and Rhonda. We're so excited for our guest speaker today. Coming to us from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, we have Shani Carmali. Welcome, Shani.
So nice to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, good. Yes, we're so happy that you could make time for us today and share your wisdom with us. And we're going to be talking about EFFT with adult children and their parents. And we're looking forward to hearing about your perspective.
And Shani, just want to say thanks so much for coming on the show. And I want our listeners to know that Shani was born in Kenya and now in Canada. So from Kenya to Canada, one side of the world to the other, is going to be so fascinating hearing about your perspective on family systems.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I left Kenya when I was 13, but certainly old enough to understand family. And
yeah, and I believe you went back recently to do some EFT down there in Kenya. And so that must have been fascinating for you as well.
It was just a wonderful experience. I know that some of you know the therapists that went there, Paul Gowery and Elwin Leash who came from South Africa. It was a beautiful bunch of therapists from the States. I was trying to get more Canadians going, but I unfortunately happened to be the only Canadian, so... But
okay.
We'll go back. We've been invited back, so we'll go back.
Nice. Yeah, and I believe you might be doing some EFFT down there as well. So they're lucky to have you. And we're excited to hear a bit about your experience doing EFFT, supervising EFFT, and particularly working with adult families in EFFT. I'm so curious what you've learned and what you think is important for folks to know and to hold on to as we serve that population.
Sure. You know, I started off my career as a family therapist working with young children and adolescents, and there's been a trend, I think, in the last 5, 10 years, maybe a bit more, for adult children to come in with their parents. And, you know, we've had discussions about this trend, and I think that when adult children become parents, you know, one of the things they sort of talk about, I mean, jokingly, is I'm not going to do what was done to me. I'm not going to parent the way I was parented. And we know that when we're stressed or when we're under pressure, we go back to our default parenting template, which is the way we were parented. And I think oftentimes that's the impetus for adult children coming in with their parents. They want to do two things. They want to repair the rift or the, you know, disconnect with their parents, if there's been one. And they also want to do different for their kids. They want to change the trajectory.
Can I just digest this quickly? That's absolutely right. Like many of us, when we're hitting parenting, we have ideals of doing things so differently. We have our experience of having been parented, but then we absolutely, in moments of difficulty, just default to how we were parented. And you're saying folks are coming in kind of knowing that, wanting to change that, and not just to change it for the next generation, but actually to look back and try to heal some of that with the previous generation. I mean, that's bold, right? That's really amazing. That's bold and that's courageous. I was just to someone yesterday who said, you know, every generation parents differently and every generation struggles to understand the next generation or struggles with aspects of the previous generation. Like that is built into our society. But if we can acknowledge that and then actually have those conversations, wow.
So I get adult children contacting me, wanting to come in with their parents. And I also get parents contacting me, wanting to come in with their adult children, because if we look at it from another vantage point as grandparents, right, when they see their children parenting their grandchildren and maybe recognizing some of the mistakes they've made or some of the ways they, you know, wish they could have done it differently. So I get it from both ends, which I think is great. I think that that speaks to that strong attachment, right? That parent-child bond is so strong. It doesn't matter how old you are, right? It's so strong. And I don't think you're ever done parenting, right?
And this quote. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I love this quote from Susan Engel. When they're little, they sit on your lap. When they're big, they sit on your heart. You're never done. You're not done. I love that quote, right? Which is so true, right? Because I think in Western culture and maybe other cultures, we think, okay, you're off to school. Mm-hmm. Off you go. You're 18. Off you go. You know, and we know right through Bowlby's work that attachment is beginning till the end, from cradle to grave. Like, and our attachment system doesn't change, no matter how old we are. Mm-hmm.
It's so funny. I always imagine my kids kind of doing a gap year, touring the world, going to universities kind of far away, like go see the world. And now as they're getting to that age and stage of teenagers and starting to prepare for hopefully going to college, now we've recently said to them, we'd like you to go to university in our city and you're welcome to stay home. Don't go anywhere. We'll give you as much independence as possible, but stay home for as long as possible. It's such a change in myself. Like I'm surprised at myself. That's so great.
Yeah. How we've switched, right? From moving, wanting them to be further away. And I did that. I mean, I left high school, went to Australia and lived with my auntie and wanted to do nursing. I was a nurse before I became a therapist. So I wanted to do nursing in Australia and actually applied to the school there and was hoping to stay, you know, but somehow rerouted myself back home. And my parents were, at that point, they said they were happy for me to go. But when I rerouted myself back, they were happy. So,
okay, that's actually funny. I didn't think about that. But definitely in my generation, we were all encouraged to leave the country, go do a gap year, don't even go to university right away, like go see the world. Then go when you're a little more mature and definitely go far away and like see things, you know. But maybe that's coming from South Africa, like such a tiny little country. You know, we were always very aware of the big wide world. But now, like you said, like I was originally thinking the same way for my kids and now I'm changing.
Yeah, it's like wanting to keep them close, right? About protection, wanting to keep them close and keep them protected.
Well, it's also more fun when they grow up because now it's fun to hang out with them and their friends and, you know, like, and there's so much time spent with middle schoolers and teenagers of just, like, we're in the trenches as a family, right? Just trying to make it through the week and get to extramurals. And so it kind of becomes your whole little world, you know? And so then the idea of them just leaving, oh, that's like, well, then what's my world going to be? There's some of that.
Yeah. And even though, you know, we say things like when they grown up, you know, we'll travel and we'll do all these other things, you know, it's hard, right? It's that balance between, you know, supporting them and also kind of having them launch, right? You know, like it's a dilemma sometimes, right? The push and pull that happens. Yeah?
Definitely creating space. Space for everyone to become themselves as much of who they can become.
Right.
And then seeing how the system gets bigger and takes change and accumulates around itself.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Because of that balance. We're trying to help them. I think, and I've said this to, you know, a couple of families that I'm working with, trying to help them have everything we need. I think. Yeah, in order to have the best lives they can. Right? You always want better. You always want better for them. They, right? But sometimes that can backfire.
Yeah.
As they may things differently than what we think they need. Right? And that's that overprotection, right? Sometimes it can.
I was just thinking of my son, who's not a teenager. He's 5 and a half. And just this morning, he was stepping out of the bathroom. He had just brushed his teeth to go to school. And I passed him in the hallway. I walked by the door, the bathroom door in the hallway. And all of a sudden, he lunged at me into the hallway. And he grabs me around my waist. And he goes, "But I don't want to go to school." And I said, "Okay, buddy, what's going on?" And he goes, "Because then I'll miss you so much." And I was like, how interesting. Like, he spent 2 days basically like attached at the hip to me this weekend. For whatever reason, he just wanted to have contact with me. Like, his foot had to touch my foot, or his arm, his hand had to be on my arm. Like, for whatever reason, he was just attached at the hip physically and emotionally this weekend. And then he was like about to go to school, and his brain just kind of like alert, alert. And then he was like, "I'm going to miss you so much." And I was like, really important mom moment, like, say something really savvy. Oh, like, yes, like, it makes sense that you're going to miss me, and I'm going to miss you too, and I love you so much, and school is an important place for you to go and to learn to be you and do what you love to do and get time. And I'm like, I wanted to say like all the right perfect things. That was all about like separation and closeness, wanting to honor both parts of that. And I think all I managed was like, "I love you too, buddy. I'm Wow, what a precious moment, Rhonda. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. I love your little Isaac and how he can like feel his feelings and then also put words to what he's needing, like, so clearly. And then I just love, like, I love this example, because you could do so much in that moment, right? You could reject him, you could hover and keep him home, but somewhere in your mind you're trying to make sense of, wow, this is a big response, but something's going on developmentally that he's needing a little more touch and closeness, and school's still important. But you like really can make sense of it in your mind and then respond, right? Yes. Lovely. Pretty lucky, because his signals are so clear.
Uh-huh.
Super clear signals. And then I'm like, important moment, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like the maybe old, I'm using air quotes, everybody who can't see, the old traditional way of like, "You'll be fine. You'll go to school. You have friends there," right? Like, I could have.
Get on with it. Get on with it.
Right? And I was like,
"You don't need me."
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like there's a closeness.
Yeah. But you've also raised him to be very clear in his signals, which is, I mean, makes it, I think, parenting so much easier. And then so many kiddos, you know, just are not clear, right? I have one who's super clear, and then two that I have to decipher, and they're both different, and it makes life very interesting.
Do the two of you think that the signals get more scrambled as kids get older and get more, you know, there's some ruptures that happen? Or because as I was listening to you talk about Isaac, Rhonda, I could see him as 15, sort of saying something similar to you, but in a different language. I could see him saying something at 25 or 35 or 45 or, you know, I remember I was 58 when my dad died, and they live in Calgary, which is my mom and dad live in Calgary, which is a town 3 hours away. And I would go and spend time with them and whatever. And I would never want to leave. I'd never want to leave, even though I had my family here and my kids. I mean, you know, that, you know, so that attachment system, I don't think it ever changes, right? So I could, it was wonderful. As you were talking, I could imagine him, you know, growing up and having that same.
I think that's a really lovely thought, Jenny, is how the signals change over time.
Which is something I never thought of until right now.
Rhonda's freaking out, everybody.
Okay, note to self, things to think about later. can't do that.
Gosh. And or like, you know, the signals are like you said, Jenny, hurts and injuries, misunderstanding creeps in, parents who are not available, accessible, don't quite understand, you know, kids' signals, all of that stuff creeps in and can cause a lot of miscommunication and distance and just an inability to get these moments right. And then I'm thinking of how much in even adult EFFT, the therapist is coming in and slowing down that communication dynamic in order to decipher the signal, to help send clearer signals, and how even just sending a couple clearer signals can make a big change to a dynamic.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because it feels so good when you can connect.
Oh, yeah.
A loved one, everyone is longing for and wanting that so deeply that you get a couple good signals sent and it can really start changing, priming the longing and sending you into a place of being able to take a little more risk, come out a little more clear. That can be enough to change the trajectory of that relationship.
Sure. For sure, because, you know, as you get older, like little ruptures be ruptures, you know, they can damage trust, right? And they can block that communication. And so one of the reasons I love this, right? Because I don't think it's ever too late for attachment. I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe some families. I don't know, Rhonda, might have to talk about your family at some point. But, you know, I don't think it's ever too late. I think you're absolutely right, Catherine. We long for that, right? It's wired in. It's wired in. I think Nancy Aiken talks about it's wired into keep needing your parents to be the stronger, wiser other, right? So it doesn't matter how old you are. You still need that. And I love what you're saying. You know, just a little tweak. Just a little tweak in terms of making it safe and helping parents and help our children understand cycles as well. We get into cycles. Right? And
I just think I just think it's so interesting, and I tell my couples and my families this. It's like I just can't kind of emphasize it enough that sending a clear signal, sending a clear message is risky. Being really clear in what you think, what you feel in any given moment. It's like the riskiest thing that we can do in relationship. It's so vulnerable to say, I'm not ready for that. I don't want to talk about this right now. It might be a good time for you. It's not a good time for me. I'm hurt when you say that to me right now. Like that is so risky. And you really have to have a lot of emotional balance in that moment to be able to speak so clearly. And often we just get emotionally hijacked and the reptilian brain just takes over until you kind of learn your process within yourself. But I just can't like emphasize it enough. Like to, you know, when I hear people say, well, why don't you just tell me what you think? Or why don't you just tell me no? And it's like, it's not as easy as it sounds. Like it's quite risky and vulnerable to be so clear like that.
It is. Because you don't know how it's going to land, right? You don't know how it's going to land.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's how we, I mean, some the healing involves risks, as you said, right?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. To repair rifts, you have to be willing to feel uncomfortable. You know?
Right. And I think you have to also grow a massive amount, like you talked about emotional balance, on that, like not getting hijacked. I think, you know, as parents, and I'm talking as an adult parent and a mom of adult children, I think you have to grow a massive amount of tolerance and really learn to keep your emotional balance, right? Because sometimes hearing things from our adult children can be really hard, right? And so that's where that idea of sometimes doing some work, parents building relationships, better relationships with themselves, right? The EFIT. Or having, you know, parents who have spouses or friends or partners who can actually shore them up, who can actually kind of help them stand and not lose their balance when the adult child is sort of coming at them, right? Yeah.
Do you think, Shani, that maybe as parents are aging, there can also be fresh new opportunities because sometimes they're becoming more emotional. They're starting to enter developmental stage of looking back and rethinking through life. And I think maybe some of their longings start coming to the surface more as they age. And that can create openings for adult kids to experience their parents a little differently or find, you know, a little extra accessibility.
Well, I think that's such an important point, Catherine, such an important point. And you're right, as they, you know, take an inventory of their life and as they become more frail and more dependent, you know, yeah, their longings do come. One of the things I remember my mom saying to me, and I didn't know she was going to die, but one of our last conversations, she said, "I know I haven't been the kind of mom you need."
Oh my gosh.
And she was 79, right? But she said, "I know I haven't been the kind of mom you needed." And that was a way, I think, for
her. Oh, Shani. Oh my God.
Yeah. And I think, man, if I could just have had one more afternoon with her. Just one more.
Listeners, check out our book for children of any age. It's called A Jumble of Thoughts and a Tangle of Feelings. It's on Amazon.com. If you know a child out there who is having a tough time but unable to put that distress into words, this book is your guide to helping them figure out what is going on. Whether you're an educator, a therapist, or a parent, we really think this will be a helpful guide for you.
You know, I see her going to therapy with me. We could have done EFFT because she was very interested in psychology and, you know.
Really?
Yeah. And when she said that, it was, you know, it was a healing moment because as an adolescent, you know, her and I had a very disconnected relationship and sort of that followed us through my adulthood. But yeah, when she said that, it was like,
oh my gosh, she opened the door there and it was everything to you, hey?
Oh, everything. And I said,
everything.
I didn't want to leave. I said, "Mom, I don't want to leave." You know, she said, "No, you have to go because I have to take a course." And I said, "Mom, I'll be back. I'll be back in 2 weeks," which was Thanksgiving. And she was gone. Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. What an incredible gift she gave you though, hey?
Yeah, for sure. That validation and also owning, right? Owning her part in this cycle between us. And I think that's so important when I see adult children and their parents. And that's sometimes a real challenge. And I think we talked about this a bit earlier, how easy it is for parents to keep sort of putting the responsibility back on their adult children and not own their own part, right? And I love the phrase you used, Rhonda, earlier, mining for caregiving intent, mining for parental intent. You know, one of the things that really drew me to this model is because it focuses so heavily and so beautifully on the caregiving intent. You know, and it really made me think nobody really wants to intentionally screw up as a parent, right? We want to do our best, you know?
Yeah.
And that idea of, you know, when things go south with our children, whether they're adults or younger, that shame, you know, that sometimes comes, or the guilt that sometimes comes, you know, because sort of interpreting that as somehow I failed my children, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's many levels it can progress through. But yeah, yeah.
You've got me thinking about how, like, maybe the mid-age generation, you know, being more sort of into therapy can kind of open the door and invite, you know, aging parents in. Because I think aging parents are often looking for an opportunity but don't really know how or what to say or where to go get that. And so we can, you know, invite them. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, like, what are you seeing in the EFFT with adult world? Is it the parents who are calling in? Is it the middle-aged kids? Is it young kids? What trends? And then I want to talk about Kenya and hear kind of how things are similar or different, you know, over there too.
Sure, sure. You know, in my practice, I see a variety. I see adult children calling in. And I think the impetus is, you know, when we become parents or when the adult children become parents and they're sort of, you know, they sort of looking at their own parenting. And of course, we all make promises to ourselves, like, I'm never going to do that when I'm a mom or I'm a dad. And yet when we get stressed, you know, our default is to always go back to our original parenting template, like the way we were parented. And so sometimes adult children will call in and say, you know, I'd like to come in with my aging mom and dad, because they're recognizing the repeating patterns that are happening, you know, between them and their children. And sometimes actually I get aging parents, grandparents calling in, because, you know, they sort of watch in their children parent their grandchildren, right? And it's kind of a generation over and kind of looking at watching their adult children parent and maybe recognizing maybe that some of the way they parented their adult children wasn't really necessarily in the best they knew at the time, but wasn't really necessarily building connection and attachment. So I get it both ways. And there have been times, actually, I did have a teenager. She was 17 and she came in and she wanted her mom and her grandma to fix their relationship. So that was kind of unique, you know. She was saying, this is really impacting me because I love both. I love my mom and I love my grandma. And so that really, yeah. I don't know if that sort of answers the question, but.
First off, I just want to say, like, what a brave 17-year-old. Wow. Like, what a bold, brave 17-year-old to say, hey, like, my family needs some help. Like, it's hard on me. It's impacting me. And we just need some outside.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. She's very aware. And she is very aware of the kind of rift or disconnect between her mom and her grandma. And she had attachments, strong attachments to both of them, right? And so, yeah, that was unique. The oldest adult child family therapy I've had is with an 85-year-old aging parent, and her three children who are all in their 50s and 60s. And one of the things she said to me was, Shani, that their dad had died. Dad had died 3 years ago. And this created a rupture in the siblings because, you know, wills and different, you know, complex things that come, right? And people pass away. And the siblings weren't talking to one another. And this was just so heartbreaking for this 85-year-old mom's heart. So heartbreaking. In the first appointment with me, she said, Shani, I just want to go to my grave. Feeling, knowing that my children will be connected to one another. It's just so, you know, even talking about it right now, I just been choked up, right? Like, what a beautiful, I mean, she wants to her kids to have each other after she dies.
Absolutely.
Not feel alone. And
a beautiful desire. Like, I've never thought about that before, but like, what a beautiful legacy to leave. And I wonder if everyone desires that. I mean, I know I want my kids to be close through their life, right? So I'm sure we all want that.
That idea of the three of her siblings being alone, right? Even though they have spouses and,
yeah,
well, two of them have spouses. But that idea of not wanting them to be alone, right? Yeah, so that's still a family I'm working with, and it's slow. That's one of the things I want to say, and maybe both of you know this as well, that with adult children and their parents, oftentimes FFT is much slower, right? Much slower, and sometimes it's really hard to keep that hope and help them hang in there, right? Because oftentimes one or the other will say, this isn't for me, or this isn't working, or this isn't fast enough, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. So I think that's one of the huge differences I found working with adults and their parents, adult children and their parents.
Interesting. So compared to working, like doing EFFT with younger kids?
Adolescents.
The adult ones takes longer because there's like more layers of things to work through. And yet the adults can probably be a bit clearer maybe about their thoughts and feelings, or maybe that's...
So I feel like you two have just been a fly on my family therapy wall. I feel like you're reflecting what I'm feeling in the room.
Oh, really? Like this matches you've been experiencing?
Yeah, matches it. It feels slower. It feels positions are a bit more rigid, but also the adult children can be more clear and take more risks, at least in session. But then also the parent, again, limited experience. Let me be really clear about that. Limited experience and exposure. But that also, the each position can be a bit more rigid. And then, you know, incidents after incident of all the hurt, right? And so it's really just built up, like years and years of built up specific hurts that they've never been able to get to. So yeah, I feel like you two are a fly on my wall.
And, you know, adult children, right? Their relationship with their parents is optional, right? I mean, they have their own children now. They have their own, you know, partners there. So, you know, it's not like when you're younger and you really need your parents. I mean, we always need our parents, but needing them in a different way, I think, you know, when we're younger, as opposed to how we need them when we get older, right? We need them more emotionally, I think, as they get older and as we get older, right? We need that emotional disconnection to be repaired, as you said, right? Under that, you're right. There's oftentimes lots of past unresolved blocks or injuries that impact the relationship, and those need to be processed and talked about. Yeah.
Stanny, coming from Africa, from Kenya, I'm curious, how does that inform the family therapy that you do? Does it?
It can. You know, with families that I see who are from different cultures, I mean, a lot of them have adapted to, you know, the Western way of parents and children, adult children. But there are still, you know, families here that I see where the grandparents want to come in, right? So not only the parents, but the grandparents want to come in as well. And yet, because it's healing on three levels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The parent and the child who's like 23, 24, you know. In Kenya, though, one of the questions when we went back this summer, and we did an externship with a group of Kenyan therapists. It was 121 therapists. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just amazing. 121 therapists. So, you know, that just proves how profound and how important attachment is. But one of the questions that I got asked was, you know, when family means different things, right, in different countries and different areas, and when family means like, you know, lots of African countries, African places, and even in Kenya, right? Family is not only it's not only the nuclear family, like it's extended and then extended and then extended. I mean, one of the things I remember, and my daughters were asking me about this, but one of the things I remember is growing up and having to call people auntie or uncle, right? Even though they weren't my auntie and uncle, right?
Oh, I did that in South Africa. Absolutely. Everyone was auntie and uncle, even my teachers.
Hey, oh, okay. Yeah. But I think, you know, part of that, and we laughed when I went back to Kenya about this, but I think part of that is because for my family and for other families who didn't have, you know, my grandparents lived further away, right? My grandparents lived farther, they lived a couple hours away. And so we only got to see them once every month. And I think then you built your own family, right? My parents figured out a great way to build their own family, like my family for me and my brother, right? And so that idea of calling auntie and uncle, you know, and so having to explain that to my adult daughters, like, yes, it's a form of respect, but it's also because they are like family to us, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it was an unbelievable experience. There was a lot, you know, with number of workshops, and they're very, very interested in EFFT. So
Hey, so I'm on the edge of my seat, Shani. What was the question that you got asked?
What was the question I got asked?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Sorry. Bring me back. So, you know, we learn, right, that attachment is dyadic, or, you know, the distress typically happens between two people. Anyway, that's, you know, that's how it's framed here. And that makes sense in, you know, in the Western world. But the question I got asked by one of the therapists there was, well, you know, how does EFFT work when there's a number of different relationships? Like, Catherine, you mentioned like a village, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where do you start? I think was the, right? How do you start when, well, two things. I mean, they can have many, 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 many secure relationships, which is great. In addition, you know, or when they haven't got parents, or parents have not been able to take care of them. But also on the flip side, right, where there's lots of insecure attachments and lots of disconnections with different people, right? And where do you start? And so, you know, I mean, I don't know if I answered the right way, but I think I said, you know, you go where the pain is. We go where the distress is, right? And it might just, you know, you might have to choose, but I would ask the, you know, adult, child, or, you know, adolescent, you know, where would you like to start? You know, you can't obviously do that with a really young kid, but, you know, with adolescents and young adults, absolutely asking them, you know, yes, validating. Yeah. You have lots of different relationships that have been fractured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm so happy that you are, you know, wanting to heal these.
That speaks
of your bravery and your intent. And where would you like to start?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if that answers your question, because I still think attachment's dyadic, but it's, you know, that's what I mean. Like, it takes a lot longer, right? Sometimes it takes a lot longer when you're working in the FFT, especially with, you know, as we get older. Yeah.
That's a really nice way to manage that, like to ask the person who they would like to work with or have there. Or, yeah, I do think there are different attachment philosophers and they have different ideas of attachment being dyadic or being way bigger than that. And, you know, people not just having a couple attachment relationships, but having a more collective kind of experience. But I think that depends on how we define it.
Yeah. And you know, asking that question, where's the hurt? And who is the hurt most connected to? Right? Where's the pain? Where's the hurt? And who's the hurt? As if we're talking collectively, right? Because it's sometimes hard to distinguish. But I love what you're saying, Catherine. You're right. There's a number of different philosophies around attachment, for sure.
Yeah. Wow, how fun that you get to be out there and kind of getting back to your roots, and I'm assuming connecting back with aunties and uncles in your village and your family. And remarkable to be able to bring everything back full circle, I imagine.
Yeah, it was lovely. It was lovely. I went back after half a century. I left when I was 13. I'm now 63. So I left, you know, when I was 13, going back up to half a century was quite amazing. But what really, I think, struck me was the longing. I'm going to use that word, the longing for therapists in Kenya to learn this model. Well, I think they did a externship in Uganda maybe 2 years ago. I keep forgetting what 2025. So that's how the Kenyan externship idea came up.
Yeah.
And I just could not go. I was talking to my husband now. He said to me, I was debating whether to go. And he said, you know, every time you talk about this, you start to cry.
Oh, so you have to go.
Yeah.
So that made my decision quite easy. But yeah, I hope to go back. But that longing that they have, that thirst for knowledge and that thirst for, you know, yeah, they were very eager to learn, you know, from what we've learned and extrapolate it and, you know, make it culturally sensitive to their communities and so on.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you could go back and do that, Jenny. I love how you followed the emotion, followed your heart. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And thanks to the EFFT you're doing with adults and teaching, supervising, and thanks so much for chatting.
Actually, I actually mentioned your podcast.
Yeah.
Because they are, so hopefully they will, you know, they will sign on.
Oh, yay. Well, it's a free source, so hopefully that's helpful. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you guys cover such a wide range of topics. So good.
I hope that, you know, with Wi-Fi and in Africa, depending on, you know, connectivity, hopefully podcasting is easy to listen to there. Hopefully this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of the things I want to say is it wasn't like a one and done. So we're actually, myself and a group of other therapists in the States are actually supporting the Kenyan therapists by doing once a month, I think we do an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Of some, like a tango move or something like that.
Okay.
Some, you know, FT.
Yeah. Like offering offering bite-sized classes or workshops or something to them. Follow up.
Yeah, online. Yeah.
Very cool. That's so funny you mentioned that, because when I thought about Uganda and Kenya after they were done, I was like, yeah, but then what? Like, then we can't leave them alone. Like, we got to have a plan for how to continue to support them. So that's soothing to me to know that, yeah, there's a plan in place of how to support them afterwards. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they did core skills in Uganda. When I was in Kenya just a week before, they were doing core skills, and they're hoping to do core skills in Kenya, I think, in the next year or two, right?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, keeping that attachment frame, right? Keeping them in the attachment shell.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you, Shani, for sharing with us about Kenya and Uganda and your work with adult families. I love the quotes that you brought to us, so thank you so much.
Yeah. Can I add one more?
Oh, of course. Yes.
I'm a father of attachment, John Bowlby. Family ties can evoke the most intense emotions. Joy in the making, anguish in the breaking.
Oh, ditch that on a pillow.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, hopefully there'll be, you know, that's why I think adult children and their families, you know, starting to come more, as Catherine said, right? This generation's more aimed at therapy. And I think that disconnection is so painful,
yeah.
Right? When parents are disconnected from children, doesn't matter how old you are, or children are disconnected from their parents, it sort of scratches at our hearts, right? It makes them feel good. So thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Thank you, Shani. All the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.